my pap. He had a farm. He was by the creek, big creek. He had a couple cows down there. I got up, took a couple of his cows. We found one of them, it's dead. It was way about 100, 200 yards down there dead. He's trying to get the cows, more cows up there on the higher ground where he lives. Take them up through there. Got some of them, but some are gone. Went up in his field, took them.
Pretty rough, huh?
Yep. My dad lost his truck too, his pickup. So he had down there, like, when he had it, and he washed it away. I'm guessing our pickup now. Chevrolet.
Did your dad worry very much?
By his skidder and stuff. He said, wish it wasn't gone. Mom was gone. Yeah, we took a long time to get down there. Down there where Dad worked at is that one bridge. It was gone, both of them, that railroad bridge and that big bridge. It's gone. Now I got one little bridge, but why is these three tables? It's one of them, like, metal bridge, but it don't matter. They'll take it apart for the new one in. I got a railroad bridge back up. So we went down that one day. We saw it. Mess. See, my dad's working for the government now. He's helping clean up places and stuff.
That's good.
Down about below me. I live on Black and Black. There's a nursery grape below me, way down there. I've done that one day. There's the trailer in our house. It was over there. And I went down to Mean Pete and Kev. Went down there, sold the house. It was up over the house that second day. Still over the house. After them dried out, water went away. About 10 feet of stand. Standing all week across there. They decayed in the floors down there. You try to take them motorbikes bikes and floors down, they won't go. Get hung up. Bo got hung up.
Thank you for talking to me.
Anyway.
Tell me your name.
Tony Orman.
What is it?
Tony Orman.
Tony Orman? How do you spell your last name?
A-R-M-A-N. A-R-M-A-N.
And where do you live?
Hamilton.
What's your address?
P.O. Box 181.
And your phone number?
478-3070.
What's your parents' names?
Kathy and James Arnold.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got one brother and one sister. My sister's 1 year old, my brother's six.
What are their names?
My sister's name's Angie, and my brother's name's Richie.
Richie. Can you tell me what you remember about November 4th? Did you come to school that day?
My uncle, he was up Hinchcliffe with Eddie's dad and these other guys. He got stranded overnight. And he had to walk across the railroad bridge. And there was a guy that had great big old tires on his truck. He tried to go across the bridge, and it was up to his headlights on the bridge. And he got stuck there, and his truck got washed down the river. And me and my cousin, we was walking up the tracks, and there's a sports car laying up there in the river, and there's a old Jeep, and there's a train car that hit it. And all you can see is the bottom of that Jeep, and the rest of it's just flat. And somebody took the wheels off of it and the hubs and everything. And my friend, he took and was in a flood, and he had, I think it was 117 guns, and he found 40 of them, and he lost seven pistols in it in the flood, and he has this great big old hole where his house used to sit, and he says he thinks they're down in there, but it's froze over with water and stuff. So he's going to have a fire department to pump it out for him so he can get his guns. And my uncle was working on his truck at night, same night of flood. And we live about a mile from the river. We's up in our garage, and we walked out, and you could hear the river down there taking houses down. And this one house, it just looked like it exploded. It was a brick house. Water went inside of it and just exploded it. And down there at Parsons, we got to go across before anybody because we had to take this woman home that was stranded up our house. And down there, it looked like up there on Quality Hill where the bridge was tore apart, but it wasn't. It took the blacktop off on the other side of it. So he took and put a ladder across the bridge. Then he had like these pulleys on a rope and took people across. Then my aunt and uncle were stranded in Philippi for 3 days because he went over there to get something. And he got stranded there, and my grandmother, she was going to get down there and go across the bridge so she could go see if he's home or anything. And he took and he had to go, I think it was 37 miles to get to our house. So he could tell him that he's all right. And then once we got there, as soon as he got there, electric and stuff went out. And our friend that runs a post office, her name's Norma, her house run into our other grandmother's house. And there was this, I forget what it was, but it was down at Greenhall, and it hit another truck, and it's a town truck, and the town truck never even got hurt. I guess because it's so heavy, it just set it on the other side of Greenhall. And now my uncle, he bought this truck off this guy that was sitting in a old sand place where it washed it away, and that guy said he'd never get it running. My uncle's got it running. And down there at St. George, there was a cow underneath the bridge, stuck up in the rafters of the bridge. And we used to go hunting and fishing and stuff down there. My uncle, he said all we catch this year is rifles and stuff, and all kinds of stuff. And he said that we probably not get to go fishing this year. He said there wasn't no use to buy your license or something.
Why is that?
Well, he said there ain't hardly any places to go fishing unless you go up on the mountain or someplace up Thomas.
And it washed the fish out of the river?
Yeah, it probably killed them or something because all that stuff going out there. And
What's it been like for you since the flood?
Well, I sort of don't like it because when you get down Parsons, there ain't no place except for Jim Props and A&P to get anything. And if it happened to start snowing real hard and stuff, you might not be able to get down there because of that new road. And plus, if there's another flood that would come, they'd just wash all of it back out where he put it in, all that rock and stuff, because it ain't packed down yet. And my uncle had to help him run that steamroller down there at St. George. And we went down there the day before the flood. And you could see all the road and stuff, and then we went down after it, and there was about 10 foot of water over the road. And these policemen was on that new bridge and how big it is. And he was in their Jeep, and it took and was coming 5 foot up over that bridge. And they found that truck down the sandbar.
Did you ever dream about the flood?
No. My brother, he had nightmares about it for a long time.
He did?
Yeah, he dreamed about that he was in the flood and stuff, and there, all these houses was going down, and he saw this guy in there and everything.
He dreamed that?
And my uncle said when he was up there stranded, he said that he saw these cars going down the river and his hand and stuff going down the river. And he still ain't found Maxine's husband.
Is that Maxine Bonner?
Yeah. She runs our bus and he still ain't found him. And
Is he some kin to you?
No. But my cousin and them, he live in Texas, and he said that he wished he could come up and look at it. And my dad, he lives on the mountain, and he was down there watching it, and there's all kinds of deer, he said, and bear and stuff floating down the river. He said there's this one deer that was was way up on top of a great big tree. Where the water come, you could tell because there's clothes, and it'd take about two of these schools in this one place up there on the ridge to get up to it. And Peck Mitchell, he took and was in the flood, and they lost a real old car and a bunch of four-wheelers and some guns, stuff. When we went down to look at it, this guy named Cliff Roy, he took and went down there, and there's all kind. He saw his electric lines laying around and all kinds of stuff. And what I heard is this one guy said that somebody stepped on one of them and got electrocuted down there. And my mom and them, they went down there and took a bunch of pictures of it and stuff. And we bought these flood books from this one guy down Parsons. He went all over taking pictures. We got them from Barber County and stuff.
It's bad everywhere, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you for talking with me. Appreciate it. You're a good storyteller. Maybe some of your stories in there.
Bill Ferrer.
You're the teacher?
I'm the fifth grade teacher at Hamrick School.
Where do you live?
Presently, we live in Elkins. I'm married, my wife is a teacher, and I have two daughters, 4 and 2. And before the flood, we lived in the pulp mill bottom next to the shoe plant. We rented a house, but it was 2 stories. And the day of the flood, the 4th, I'd taken a personal day because I'd run a marathon on Sunday in Washington, D.C. We stayed overnight, and on Monday, we drove back from Washington, D.C. And it rained very, very hard all the way back. We got back into Parsons about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Our girls were very tired, so we ate an early supper. And we listened to the news, Channel 5 or Channel 12 from Clarksburg, Fairmont. And there was no warning of a flood. They said some high water somewhere, but nothing mentioned about Randolph or Tucker, to my knowledge. I helped my girls get ready for bed, and they went up about 6:45. My wife suggested that I go over and buy an Intermountain paper to see if we could find anything about the news that we'd missed. I walked over in town. I had a pair of tennis shoes on, and the shortcut, it was already about thigh deep, so I knew right away not even to go that way, and I walked to the shoe plant, and there's a storm drain that's always backed up, and I had to walk across the street. At that time, the water was about 6 inches deep. I found a spot where I could sort of hop, skip, and jump, and without going up 6 inches. I walked over to the News and Novelty and bought an Intermountain. I had an umbrella, which seemed ridiculous, but I did anyway. While I was over there, I could hear the river, so I thought I'd better go down and just get a close view of it. I'd moved from Pennsylvania about 5-6 years ago, and the water was moving as fast as I'd ever seen it before. There weren't a whole lot of people out, very few people driving cars, and hardly anybody walking. I was still stiff from the marathon, so one of the best things to walk, so I tried to walk over and check it out, and I walked home as fast as I could. There was still no mention on the news or the TV or the local cable channel about anything. Our girls were asleep at that time. It was about 7 o'clock, 10 after 7. Some people over from Virginia Street that we used to live by called and said that they were evacuating and be thinking about leaving. About 5 minutes before they had called, I spoke to my wife and I said, I don't think we can get our car out. The storm drain had backed up even further and it was about eight inches deep on that corner. And I said, well, I can either try to get it out. And she said, well, where would you take it? And I said, well, we could try to get up by one of the churches up by Parsons Graded School. And I'd gotten to the point where I was afraid that the car wouldn't get through the water, so we were going to leave it in the garage. In the meantime, I walked down to the river about 100 yards from our house. And again, it was up very, very high, higher than I'd ever seen it. And the lady next to the river was evacuating her house. And as I think back now of all the wasted time, I could have moved so much things, but I just didn't. Came back and talked to a neighbor who's in the early 70s. Said, do we have anything to worry about? And they said, well, don't think so. It'll just come up to a telephone pole about 25 yards from your house. It may get in your street, but there's nothing to worry about. So at that time, my wife and I were standing out in the front porch like most of our neighbors. And we were looking over the situation, went back in, and the policeman came, went out on the porch. He said, you have about 5 minutes to leave. Get out as soon as you can. I told him that I had a very small import car, and I didn't think I could get out through the corner. And he said, well, if you leave right now, you can. So we went upstairs. On the way up, we carried a few valuables that we could in our hands, and we each took a daughter, and they were still in their pajamas, put their coats on. The four-year-old was in the kitchen, and we were ready to leave, go out the door, and she said, I have to go to the bathroom. So we were in such a rush, we said, well, go ahead. And there's a half bath downstairs. Instead of walking 10 feet, she got on the garbage can and went, and she felt really bad about that, but it was just that we had to leave so fast, we just forgot the normal things that we'd always do. We put them in the car and they were asking, you know, what are we supposed to do? Why are we leaving? What's wrong? And my wife and I were trying to be as calm as possible, but yet try to remember everything. And we left and we got through the water at the corner. It was about 10, 12 inches at that time, and drove over to Quality Hill. There's an Exxon in, I believe, Main Street of Parsons, and we barely got through there. It was about 10, 12 inches, and we went very, very slowly. We got up to another teacher's house who asked us to stay, and at that time, I left the girls and made sure they were settled and walked back over. I had a pair of insulated snow boots on, and I walked back down, and it was approximately 7:30, 7:45. Back down to her neighborhood. Most of the people had left. I had to walk around the deepest puddles, but it was over my boots, about knee deep in certain areas. I didn't go in her house. Our neighbor was very elderly, probably early 80s, had a cane, could barely walk, and I helped him get in his car. And I remember trying to figure out whether I should go in the house or leave. I knew my daughters were very upset, my wife was upset, so instead of going back in the house and possibly getting stuck, I walked back home, or up to Quality Hill. In that time, the water still had risen so much. It was past the telephone pole where the older person told us not to, you know, don't worry. I felt so helpless because so many people I knew needed help. When I was walking back down, I walked across the bridge in Parsons and said, if someone would get stuck in that water, there's just no way that they could get out. And I just said, so many people needed help, but I went home and tried to settle my daughters down. In the meantime, the last people from Pennsylvania Avenue walked in the door at the house where we were staying. They came on a front end loader, and they were the last people off Pennsylvania Avenue. A man and his wife, and I think two ladies who were up in their 80s. We got our girls to sleep, and they started talking. The man worked at Lambert Chevrolet, and he said, I'm never going to have a job. I don't have my car. We lost it. They're never going to open up because it's just totally destroyed. At that time, I realized how big a disaster it really was. And that evening, the lady was reminiscing about when she was a girl. I think in 1925 or so, there was a flood. She remembered how high the water had gotten. She said that the thing she remembered the most was her dad and brother going back in the house with 22s. And she just heard the guns blast, 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 shooting snakes. And that's what she could remember over and over again. So finally, we went to bed. I slept on the floor. My wife was tossing and turning. She was sleeping with my daughters. I didn't get much sleep. Every time I dozed off, I kept feeling snakes coming over me. And my wife didn't either. We heard the older people talking, did you bring your nitro? They all had, both ladies had heart trouble. We said, oh my, we can't get to Tucker County Hospital. I don't think anybody's gonna get up here. If they have a heart attack, what's gonna happen? The man was holding his chest. So we were just going through those thoughts. And over and over again, you know, I was thinking about, you know, what about the stuff we lost? But having seen the river the way it was, I was just thankful that we'd gotten out. The next morning, as soon as daylight hit, we got up and the man and I walked down. The slough bridge by the Big T was, they said, washed out, water flowing over it. I couldn't get back across the bridge into Parsons. I did walk back through the hillside and check to see if our house was still there. It was still there, but water had been, from what I could see, it had been up 6 feet on the garage door, but it was about 300 or 400, 500 yards away. I went back to the house where we were staying and told my wife, I think you ought to take a look, trying to be as calm as I could because their daughters are still saying, you know, I want to go home. Why are we here? My wife went down and, you know, it was disbelief. The electricity had gone off that evening about 10 o'clock. The phone went out about 9:30 that evening. And we were without electricity. The lady had gas heat and the heat was working or it came back on. All through it all, it just made me very, very a part of history. I realized how much of this life I take for granted. The river, when it's shallow, my daughters and I go out and we throw rocks. And how something so gentle and so beautiful can be so tough too. I walked back over to our house when the water went down about noon that day. There was mud over my knees and I was walking down with our neighbor, and down by the shoe plant there was a little bit of water on top of the mud. And it smelled like fuel oil. And my neighbor was smoking a cigarette. And I just said, oh my. To go through the flood and then have it blow up because he was smoking a cigarette. But it didn't. I got into the house and things had changed a great deal. The last thing my wife and I had done since we were teachers, we put our checkbook on top of the refrigerator and our grade books. Well, when I walked in the kitchen door, They were in the mud on the kitchen floor. And we said, well, surely it won't mess up something that high. The water had gotten between about 5, 10, and 6 feet in the various rooms. And it changed things a great deal. My wife and I were thinking, you know, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? And yet it just didn't seem important at all. It didn't seem important whether I had a job, whether she had a job. I was just so concerned and so saddened because, you know, I didn't know what happened to the kids and everybody who'd got caught out in that water. It just made me very thankful for, you know, the country we live in. As soon as possible, I think on Wednesday, we went to Elkins and we realized we couldn't find another apartment in town and found a place that we could move into. On Thursday, we moved into the place, just what we had on our backs, and we spent the next week between Elkins, driving over, and then trying to clean up the mess and throw it out in the street. One of the worst jobs I had was to clean out the refrigerator because we had powdered milk and the water had affected that, and we had spoiled milk on the floor, and we didn't have a babysitter, and we didn't know if we had jobs, and we were a little afraid to spend too much money. So one of us watched the girls in the car down by our house, and while the other one lugged stuff or packed stuff to throw out in the street. And we did that for like 5 mornings straight. And we were just wondering, you know, how it was going to affect our girls, because they were seeing all their toys, all their materials that they liked so much. I think one of the most things that hurt us the most was my oldest daughter. She didn't care about dolls, she didn't care about toys, she just cared about books. And we had about 400 or 500 paperback books that she loved. And, you know, she had to sit in the car and watch us pitch them out in the street. And plus our neighbors were doing it too. One of the saddest moments the whole time was one of our neighbors says they're giving free meals up the church. I believe it's First Methodist. And my wife and I were very proud. We worked our way through college and, you know, didn't like to take handouts from anybody. But we didn't have any food and we were in Elkins. So when we were over in Parsons, we went up there for lunch. And it was very, very sad because we got a plate for my daughters, and we didn't get a plate, and we were starving, but, you know, we were too proud. And these old ladies, you know, up in their 80s, just working so hard to get food for the people, they brought us a plate. And, you know, it was just too much. I started crying, tears running down my face, and my girls were saying, well, why are you crying, Daddy? And it just, you know, just people mean so much, what they do. Even though they were in the flood, they were cooking food for other people. And, you know, it just made me realize that we're very fortunate to live in this country. Since the flood, you know, we're living in Elkins. My daughter, every time it rains, she says, I'm glad I don't live in Parsons. I don't care if you rent a place up on a hill. I don't want to live in Parsons. And she just said, thank you for moving to Elkins. And, you know, as soon as we got an Elkins paper, there was one thing in it that brought everything back to focus for me. On that day, before we left, I had the map out. My wife was saying, you know, should we try the southern route in the Elkins through Petersburg? And we decided, since it was raining so hard, we'd come home through Romney. And we saw the story about another marathoner from Elkins who lost his wife going home the way we had planned to go. And, you know, no matter what we lost, no matter how our lives changed, it just brings it all back to purpose, you know, one day at a time. And if we'd make a different decision, you know, my whole family would have been gone. And it's made me very, very thankful just to everyone in the community, you know, Some people might not have even spoken to me or didn't even know me, just so generous and helpful. The Salvation Army gave us things, provisions to help us, the Red Cross. A family from Westernport, Maryland, adopted our family and sent goods and supplies and canned goods and Christmas presents and Christmas tree ornaments, and they didn't even know us. And it just kept coming and coming. And then they finally come back to school and you say, well, you know, school's important, but how did it affect, you know, these kids? I know how it affected me and my family, but to see how hard that they were willing to work and try to get back to routine education to learn something in spite of everything that happened, how it affected their lives, just, you know, really amazes me. And, you know, very, very thankful for people like Mr. Warner, you know, go out and that and take pictures so that other people would see, because, you know, we were just cut off. And for them to have the insight and the ability and the strength and the courage to do that, it's just, you know, very, very thankful for the resources of people in this area and in our country. Thank you.
What's the, how are the children in your class, do you think? How are they adjusting to all this?
I think everyone's so different. Some people can say it's not affecting them at all, and yet it might, and not show. Other people, it's affecting them so much that, you know, even to talk about it, it's right.